Dude, if I start shrinking before your very eyes,
I'll let you know.
let me know. We need like a signal, you know? Maybe you can make the crib sign, flash the crib sign, the bloods.
Jen was Alice in Wonderland in
I know.
the last pod.
I know. Yes, I want you all to know that I know now. It was like that meme, how it started, how it's going.
It was funny because I noticed you were like kind of shrinking down, but I didn't really think
Oh.
anything of it. And then when you texted afterwards, I was like, yeah, you kind of
Yeah.
were getting almost out of frame. Your face was still there, but.
Well, by the end, I was just like this floating head, and props to Matt for not being like, "Excuse me, ma'am, I can't answer that question. Honestly, how can I take you seriously? I mean, really." Steven.
Hey guys, how are you?
Good.
Hello.
How are you?
Good, good.
To Beer Net Radio, would like to welcome Steven Gavula III, founder of Costa Tequila. And Costa Tequila is a high-low tequila, I believe the first high-low tequila, named for blending 100% blue Weber agave sourced from two traditionally separate regions in Jalisco. But it caught our eye because you guys are doing something a little bit different. You're going in some markets with some really big beer wholesalers. I think last year you guys announced you're giving the brand to Henley in Arizona, and you've recently announced that you're going in parts of New York with Sheehan Family Company. So two very big beer wholesalers, but we'll get into that and a lot of other things. So thank you for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Sweet. So first, tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into tequila. I mean, do you come from the industry? Where did the idea come from? All of that.
Yeah, it's a great question. It really was a true passion project. So my heritage, my background is a bit in the hospitality business. So my great grandfather was actually in the beer business, my grandfather was in the hotel business, and then my father was in the restaurant business. And of course, myself, I went into the corporate business, the corporate world. So I did about 16 years in the corporate world, focused away, but I guess something was in the blood. So the idea was, I had done a, I had been looking at trying to do things a little bit different in a number of different industries. And I enjoyed kind of the hospitality business, the spirit side of things. I had looked a lot at that business, but I never really thought of it as something that I would run or own a company at that point. So I had gone on a trip to Jalisco, Mexico, and that was back in 2016. And this was your typical bourbon trail, but doing it in tequila. So heading down there, visiting a number of distilleries, talking about the product, and I found out that there was this deep love and affection towards tequila. The country and the people involved, it was just so infectious that I spent about 2.5 years down there, kind of researching, learning more about the product. I was going obviously back and forth between the US and Mexico, but I had found a small distilling family that was willing to do a little bit of something different with tequila. And I thought that at the time, this was 2016, so tequila was 4% of the US spirits market. I think now it's roughly 21, 22%. I'm not sure where Discus puts it now, but there's been this, the last 8 years has been an extreme kind of move in the agave space. I'm sure you guys have seen it. There's a lot of new brands on the market as well. And but at the time, there was, your typical larger brands, your Jose Cuervos, Patrons, Casamigos was there as well. But they were predominantly from one region or another. So if you've been to Jalisco, Mexico, it's the distance between a mountain region and a valley region is quite far. And a lot of the distilleries reside in one or the other areas. But what was happening was that the agave that was grown in those regions, similar to wine, have different tasting notes. So Highlands tequilas tend to be a bit more floral, sweeter, some people say smoother to drink. And then lowlands tequilas tend to be a bit more peppery and herbaceous, and silky in texture, kind of is the ending feel to those. And the lowlands tequilas are your Jose Cuervos, Herraduras, your Highlands tequilas are Casamigos and Patrons. And I had done a bit of research on kind of the spirits industry, and Scotch was always very interesting to me because it was always single barrel focus for a long period of time early on. And now everybody talks about Scotch blending. And I think the real issue with that tequila had back in that time, 2016, 17, was that it was the consumer wasn't truly educated yet on kind of where it was coming from and how it was made. And so my thought process had been, and this was before even kind of creating a business model, was rather, could I create a liquid that had tasting notes from both regions so that when I told people about the product, it would teach them a little bit more about the intricacies of tequila. And I think that's where it kind of was fostered from. I truly love tequilas that were in the highlands, but I also love those that were in the lowlands. At the time, highlands tequilas, as I said, your Casamigos and Patrons were hot and were obviously doing great things in the market at that time. I think Casamigos buyout had maybe just been done or was about close to being done. So for me, it was, could I incorporate those tasting notes from both regions? And luckily enough, over the two and a half year span, we were able to create an infrastructure that allowed us to source agave from the highlands and lowlands of Mexico and bring them to our distillery. Our distillery sits about 25 minutes outside of Tequila, Mexico. So there's a town of Tequila. And so we had to be able to truck the agave from the highlands, particularly, which is quite a distance away, to our tequila distillery, to our distillery, which is in the lowlands. So the idea was, could we create that infrastructure, which took a period of time? Could we create a liquid that made some sense? And then for me, it was at the time, could I share it with friends and family and see if people cared about it? And then this was 2019. We started entering it into some competitions. We started winning some awards. And then at that point, it was, could we actually compete with some of the large brands that are on the market that have loads and loads of money? And we did not have that at the time. And so we decided to do a proof of concept. I was living in New York City at the time. And so we did a proof of concept in October of 2019. Nothing better than starting a brand in OND, of course. But it was a great way to kind of figure out if this high-low concept would actually translate amongst consumers, retailers, and the like. And so we ended up getting about 65 different placements from October to January, which was a bit shocking to us. We had kind of a feet on the ground tactic, hand selling, which, you know, I'm sure young brands do all over the place. So we had done that. We got picked up by one of the larger spirits wholesalers, and that was in January of 2020.
Southern Glaciers, or RNDC?
So RNDC had picked us up, but they had picked us up, which I didn't really want to build the business in New York. I knew how challenging, time consuming, and capital intensive it was. We wanted to actually build the business where my hometown is, or I grew up in the Mid-Atlantic, so Northern Virginia. And so we wanted to kind of develop it around there where we had some connections. So they picked us up actually DC, Maryland, and Georgia. And Georgia was an interesting one because we had some contacts down there as well. And then, of course, March 2020, COVID hits and throws everything for a loop. And my wife is actually from the East Coast of Florida. So I had moved. At the time, I had a young kid. I've got two children now. But at the time, I had a young kid who wasn't in school. So we took the risk and moved to Florida. And it was in Florida that I started to get introduced to the beer networks. And the first beer network we got introduced to was Anheuser-Busch. Mm-hmm. And so there was a distributor on the East Coast here. I'm actually here right now. And they had said that there was an opportunity to potentially be sold through their wholesaler, which is just a territory of Florida, but that some of the beer wholesalers, particularly in the AB network, were going to be getting involved in spirits. Mm-hmm. I think we've obviously seen that over the last 8 years, and it's not just necessarily spirits. It's non-alc. It's different. It's energy drinks. It's different types of things. So, for us, I guess there was a risk and reward there. The reward has greatly outpaced the risk at this point, which has been fantastic. And the struggle we had with a larger spirits wholesaler was getting from, you know, kind of that starting point to phase one. And I think that's always the hardest things for brands. If you don't have an exceedingly large amount of money in the beginning, or at least in the tequila space, it's hard to get noticed in a portfolio where there's a lot of different tequilas. And so we found that we were getting some good focus from the beer wholesalers. And over the last 4 years, we've pretty much expanded in 13 states, or excuse me, 14 states as of about a month ago, with 45 different beer wholesalers. So I think that the traction has been great. The expansion has been really good. It's gone everywhere from Hensley in Arizona, as you say, to some of the guys, Claire Rose on Long Island, all the way down to having all the Florida guys as well, guys and girls. So I think the idea there is we are committed to partnering with people who want to help us grow. I think that the partnership is a true, you know, the three-tier system in this industry, as you guys know, can be challenging at times. And so having partners at one or the other levels is really fortunate, or has been fortunate for us, and important. So that's kind of where we're at right now. I think that the business has grown. We were 87% year-over-year growth last year, which is great. Our trailing 12 months put us roughly around 23,000 cases. Our goal this year is probably closer to 35 or 40,000 cases. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that we're looking to necessarily expand markets at this point. I think we've got a great set of wholesalers in 14 markets, and we're hoping to dive deeper into the ones that we have currently.
Right.
That's kind of the passion project turned into a business mentality, or at least business. So I don't right. The true American dream to some degree, I guess.
Yeah. The yes, on both sides of the border, right?
of course, exactly.
Quick follow up. You know, what I'm hearing you say is that one of the things you like about beer wholesalers is that they're really good brand builders, especially for young products, right? Do you think that, you know, you guys will stick with them when the product maybe gets a little bit bigger, or is it like a brand life cycle thing, or are you not even thinking about that right now?
No, it's a great question. I we don't think about it too much. I think that we have some great partners at this time to grow to that next level. I don't think that there's a reason to move at this point. And like I said, the partnership for us is number one. I think that what we've learned is that the education piece, not only for the consumer, but also for the wholesaler, has been important. So it's probably taken us a little bit longer to get to where we want to be as a brand, even though we're growing at a great rate, only because I think that the beer wholesalers, the consumers, everybody is kind of coming up the curve at the same point in time. So for us, it's been educating kind of both on this high-low concept, about tequila, about our four SKUs at this point. We just released a Costa Tequila Cafe, which is a coffee-infused tequila, coffee liqueur, which is a great product that's been getting a lot of publicity recently. So, we are in this for the long game. We're not in this for the 3 or 4 years and try and sell out. So the partnerships are more important for us, or were more important for us in the beginning, and are still more important for us now.
We talked in the past about, you know, going an easy route with wine and spirits, and it would be like instant national coverage overnight. Do you think that's still the case, or is that kind of reserved for like almost celebrity back brands now?
It's a great question. I do think it's backed for a lot of brands that either have some firepower behind them, whether it becomes a marketing tactic or capital. And so I think for newer brands that come onto the market, it becomes a bit challenging. Obviously having a great story, a great liquid is important. But I don't think anybody necessarily gets into this business that doesn't have some capital behind them, whether it's a personal investment or some sort of capital raise at some point. But in tequila space particularly, these larger wholesalers, spirits wholesalers particularly, have looked favorably upon the celebrity endorsed brands. I think that they view that as a way, to your point, getting national coverage, getting basically 0 to 60 in a very short period of time. So somebody like ourselves, who is, and I can give you guys a little bit of background on kind of our marketing strategy, but it's away from that. It's away from the celebrity endorsed brands. You know, we've taken an approach in kind of the micro influencer territory, where Yeti Coolers had a great one where they bring passionate, interesting people into their business, and they kind of seed them with a bunch of product, whether it be their coolers or hats, but they speak about it within their local communities. And, you know, we build a platform with our PR team and our social and, you know, our product capabilities to be able to allow kind of people that are passionate about their interests, their careers, whatever it might be, to get a platform here to kind of expand that. And so we first looked at the active lifestyle space. So we brought in a world longboard surfing champion, a Red Bull athlete. We've got a band that we just signed in Texas called Uncle Lucius, who was on a show called Yellowstone, if you guys know that one. And so we've got a roster of people that we kind of might not be household names nationally, but kind of help us get up the curve kind of locally in their communities, which has been a great opportunity. And on the flip side, we're able to help them with some hopefully brand recognition on their side, what they're doing, bring their career to a bit of a spotlight. So that's kind of been our approach. We've stayed away from the celebrity endorsement. But again, for us, it's a bit about building over a period of time rather than that that quick one shot from 0 to 60.
And then, you know, beer distributors have been leaning into spirits more and more. As you've partnered with more and more beer distributors, have you found that there is still a lot of education on the spirit side of things? Or are you kind of surprised at where they're already at with the spirits portfolio and what they know about, you know, that whole entire category?
I think it can range. I think it definitely is. We're in kind of this inflection point right now where there is a lot of wholesalers that are starting to look, but there's also ones that have been in the spirits game for years. So I think it's a bit of both. And we're, you know, because we're predominantly with the AB network, we kind of understand their system. We understand kind of how the organization looks, kind of the reporting systems, the ordering processes that they use. So we can kind of take what some of the more advanced wholesalers have done and kind of help guide some of the ones that that are younger in the process. I would say that for tequila particularly, and this is away from obviously the other sectors, there is probably a bit more education. I think tequila is just a newer concept for in spirits in general for either the consumer, for the consumer and the wholesaler at this point. So it's taken a little bit longer for us to get them, you know, understanding tequila, but it is finally paying off. I say to our team all the time, which is a small team nonetheless, but I say to our team that 2024 is going to be our big year. I think that this year is the one where we've built the foundation. We have a great network of wholesalers. Everybody kind of understands the products and what it should do in the market. And now it's kind of putting the pedal to the metal.
Oh, cool. You know, you mentioned you're mostly with the AB network where you're with beer wholesalers. I'm curious, did you have any prior connection to the AB network or AB? Because I know you said someone in your family worked in beer, right?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. That was a little bit during the prohibition time. So that was a little long. That was a long time. My great grandfather, a long time ago. But the I did not. So it was a personal connection to one of the AB wholesalers here in Florida, but it wasn't something from the past, which... So I think, you know, it came to life in kind of a 2-3 year span where there was a few things that were happening. I think beer had been stabilizing for a period of time. And so I think that there was some interest in looking at alternatives, like I mentioned, non-alc and spirits. So we kind of got in front of them, I guess, at an opportunistic time.
Right, right, right. No, that makes sense. Well, and so to your point, you know, I was talking with a big wholesaler. I think they're actually a Molson Coors wholesaler last year. And they said, you know, we do want to get into spirits a lot more. And he said, the problem is, you know, of course, choosing which spirit. And then he brought up the example of tequila. He's like, there's so many tequilas, you know, and you talked about the tasting notes, the regional, the terroir, that sort of thing plays in tequila, but it can also be like wine insofar as there's a lot of brands and how do you choose, right? And so that was his conundrum. Like, I don't know what's hot. I don't know what's going to keep being hot. So what advice would you give to wholesalers who are looking to maybe bring on a tequila besides Costa, right?
Yeah, of course.
Is there some things they can look for, you know, that buys quality?
Sure. I think the one thing that I would mention about tequila is that rate of growth that I mentioned from the time I started to the time to now has been extreme. So whereas you might see some other spirit segments like a bourbon or a vodka that aren't growing necessarily as fast, this one is completely taken off over the last year. And that is really, really focused domestically. So internationally, tequila is just a very, they're in inning number one internationally. And so I think from a brand standpoint, there might be an ability for these wholesalers to get on the ground with a few different brands or a brand like Costa that is growing and can be more of a national name in the next 2, 3, 4 years. And again, I think that there is a long game here for us. So I will say that, you know, our partnerships, we want to last for a period of time versus having something quick. But, you know, Molson Coors, interestingly enough, I think it's obviously public now, but they had just bought Blue Run Spirits. So there's some interest in that from that arm and they're getting involved into spirits. So I think, you know, as you dive into tequila, there might be some concentration or at least a flush of some brands over the next 2 to 3 years. I think that there's, as you said, a lot of them. And they might not be getting the time of day that they probably deserve. And so inevitably that becomes very difficult for a business. So I would, you know, my advice to them would be keep looking at the space. I don't think it's going away. I only think that it's growing. And there's going to be a few that kind of stick out over a period of time. And yeah, don't jump into ones that are just coming to market. That would be my suggestion.
Right, right. And parts of the segment are flattening out, right? Even though some parts of tequila are still growing, you know, spirits in general outside of RTD spirits are tending to flatten out, which, you know, we're typically on the beer side. We're like, haha, now you know what it feels like.
Sure.
But anyway, you know, what are the segments doing and which are the segments that are still hot?
So I think there's an interesting thing that's happening with premiumization, and particularly I'll speak to tequila, which might have happened in bourbon a bit, where when people are consumers, I believe, that don't have an idea of where something comes from initially, they normally go or are attracted to the most expensive part of that, right? So the bottle that costs the most is probably the best. Sometimes how I pick wine, unfortunately, which is, you know, not great for the wallet. But I think what, you know, part of that is in tequila now, people are recognizing a bit more of where the product comes from, how it's made, who's behind it. And with that becomes an ability to potentially trade down. And we've made a focus to be accessible for customers. We do not want to sell a product that's $100 or even $85 in a store. Our idea, you know, you walk into a store, our Blanco on the shelf is $36.99 or $37.99. Our Reposado is low 40s and our Añejo is probably, you know, low 50s, mid 50s, somewhere around there. And then the Cafe is a little bit lower than the Blanco. But, you know, the consumer, I feel like, is, so I think that the higher end tequilas are likely probably going to stabilize a bit more over a period of time. There's obviously going to be brands that do great and grow exponentially, but I think that's more catered because of the category than anything else. But the craft premium spot, I think, is a good place to be. And so you'll find people trading down into kind of that price point. And then obviously it's an economy standpoint. You know, my background is in economics, so I kind of look at that stuff a little bit. And so the idea here that it's tough these days, and every dollar doesn't go as far as it once did. People are spending less money on kind of higher end products if they can, just by knowing stuff that's of similar quality and a cheaper price point. So I can't necessarily speak for a bourbon or a vodka sector. I don't necessarily know you know, the growth potential there. I do have friends that are in the space and their brands have done very well. Yeah. So, you know, there's areas that are growing for sure.
For sure. Well, that's all I had. Anything else from you, Jay?
Yeah. I wanted to just touch real quickly, kind of going back to the origin. You know, when you had the idea of doing this high-low concept, had anybody done it before? And, you know, what was the reaction from your team or locals when you brought that idea? And have you seen anybody else replicate what you're doing now?
Yeah, so I think we've definitely seen people replicate it. And so I think that, you know, my thought process in the beginning of this was to bring a category to market similar to a Cabernet or a Merlot, where you have a number of different brands, but you're actually focused on performing something or creating a recipe that's a bit different than what was on the market. At the time, there was nothing that was intentionally doing it. So 2016, there was nobody out there that was intentionally taking agave from the highlands and the lowlands and blending it together and creating a flavor profile that was separate. I think there was, you know, a lot of the agave fields in Mexico are grown, or excuse me, are owned by a lot of generational families. And so you, as a brand, or as somebody who is trying to create a tequila, you are kind of, you're forced to look at those different fields depending on where they are. So for instance, you came to market and the only agave you could get was from the highlands, you technically created tequila from the highlands. You went to the lowlands, you technically created tequila from the lowlands. We went on a mission and basically started buying up fields in the highlands and the lowlands with our distillery to be able to make sure that we could source agave from those regions. And at the time, there really wasn't anybody that was doing it. Again, I think there was a geographical issue with, you know, being the highlands to the lowlands was a distance. So if you had a lowlands distillery, trucking agave from the highlands was just inefficient at the time. We have seen more people start doing a or create a blended concept that is on the market now. And so, you know, I don't want to necessarily, there's no official moniker that we're a trailblazer, but I think the idea here is I like being the first one to kind of talk about it rather than the last. And so we made sure that that was kind of our hallmark. We wanted to, we didn't know of anybody that was doing it at the time. And so being able to come out and talk about intentionally blending these two areas was important to us.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's a good sign. And, you know, to be differentiated in something like tequila, where it's hard, I think, for people to understand differentiation other than price point or celebrity backing. So it's really cool.
Yeah. I think that there's a world of opportunity, I think, in tequila still. And I say world because, as I mentioned, the international market is very interesting to us. We continue to get some calls from different parts of the world these days, which is great. We're focused on our wholesalers. I want to reiterate to them, if they're listening, we're focused on our wholesalers here.
They're listening.
And our markets. Yes, I'm sure they are. And we're focused on really creating a business here. So that is, I do expect us to have some pretty monumental growth this year in 24.
Awesome. Well, we'll be watching and thanks, guys. Can't wait. Yeah, I did. You guys sent a couple of those bottles, which, by the way, are really cool, especially when you put them next to each other. They have like a little bit of a deco vibe and
For sure.
So, but I will break into them very soon. They'll still be pretty even when they're half drunk. So
I'd love for you guys to try them. Yeah. I think that the brand just in general has a more contemporary feel to it. I you know, walking through stores, I was thrown off by how many ornate bottles there were and, you know, fancy labels. And I think just being simple and minimalist for us was an interesting approach that stood out.
Right. Absolutely. Awesome. Well, we'll check in with you a couple months down the road and see
Please
how do. 2024 shook up. So we appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Cheers. Yeah.